Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
The Group 3 jersey at Ascot, I have it 4-12 and 19. Hold your tickets there, though, but I think it was the co-favorites running 1-2 in the jersey at Royal Ascot. But as I say, hold your tickets there. Well, let's get right into it because we're a little late. The Ascot race took a little while to load, so we're later than planned with the Ascot race being plugged in. A little bit later on, we'll be joined live by Bob Ehalt, a writer for Blood Horse. You can also find his work on America's Best Racing. But for Blood Horse, Bob was down at Monmouth last weekend for the Pegasus, so I thought we'd get some comments on the performance by Mandaloon. Some other thoughts from Bob as well a little bit later on. As I say, we're going to start things out, though. We taped an interview yesterday with Pat McKenna from the New York Racing Association. News came out this week, 100% capacity at Saratoga. Some other Saratoga news as well as tying in a little Belmont news with Pat. So up next, Pat McKenna, the Director of Communications from the New York Racing Association. Happy to be joined now by the Director of Communications for the New York Racing Association, Pat McKenna. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on, obviously, with some of the big news coming out this last week. And on my rundown, I originally had, well, we were kind of going to go back, and chronologically it made sense to maybe get some highlights from Belmont Stakes weekend and the great weekend you had down there. But I thought, I can't bury the lead with the good news that came out this week. So I'll toss it to you. And with the past 3 months, I'd say, people have been walking up to me regularly. What do you think Saratoga's going to be like this season? How are things going to work out with fans? And I will recite at that point what the latest news is and then say, you know what, but it can change tomorrow. And I think that played out to its logical conclusion this week. So give us the latest update, the good news that came out earlier this week as far as fans at Saratoga.
Sure, and I'll take just a step back. I think that once we saw the rate at which New Yorkers were being vaccinated and understood that state government, Governor Cuomo, the Department of Health, and everyone on the science side of things recognized that the path out of this crisis was to get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. So on June 7th, Governor Cuomo made the announcement that once adults, so New Yorkers age 18 and over, once 70% of that population had at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, then essentially all restrictions that were in place for commercial and social settings would go away. So we made that announcement on June 7th. And so this was expected. What we didn't necessarily know was if those restrictions would also be lifted for outdoor sports and entertainment events. Luckily, they were. They're still in place for some indoor sports and entertainment venues. So what that means is Saratoga will be open at 100% capacity with no additional restrictions in place other than our NYRA requirement that unvaccinated individuals wear a mask at all times when on the property. And that's in accordance with current CDC guidance. So we would have been open at 98% capacity with the entire backyard designated as a vaccinated section, all the hospitality areas designated as vaccinated sections, and then a smattering of unvaccinated sections. So what this does is, certainly from the operational side, open things up, walk-up admission. There should be no question in fans' minds whether or not they can show up on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and buy admission at the gate. That is now possible. So it demonstrates the progress that we've made in New York, remembering that New York was hit hardest and first by this pandemic. So, we're thankful that we'll be able to be open at 100% capacity without some of those requirements in place, like having to demonstrate proof of vaccination. We certainly encourage folks, racing fans, to go out and get vaccinated because it's the best way to protect yourself and your neighbors. But this Saratoga meet will feel a heck of a lot like Saratoga 2019, 2018, the Saratoga that people remember, friends and families gathering in the backyard, people on the apron scattered throughout our hospitality areas. We'll be offering some new hospitality areas this year. So we feel the excitement in the air. I know that in my conversations with people who are in Saratoga, that the town is excited. We're selling tickets in a way that we have never before. In certain hospitality areas, we sold more tickets in a day than we sold in all of 2019. You know, in that first hour we went on sale on that Wednesday, just, you know, incredibly strong sales, which really just, you know, it shows you how eager people are to get back to Saratoga. It's such a special place. It's such a special experience. And it really is the way that families and friends, especially in upstate New York, mark the passage of time by being with their friends and families and neighbors around a picnic table in a box, wherever they may be, and enjoying, you know, one of the greatest experiences, one of the most iconic venues in all sports. So we're excited. Fans are excited. Can't wait to get back up there, frankly.
I like that. Mark the passage of time. I never thought that about it that way. But I did. Hey, you remember the year American Pharoah? And remember, yeah, there is a certain a Saratoga to the calendar of our lives. And I can verify people up here are very excited. I can't wait to see what opening day is like. I think it's going to be nuts. After last year, I think people are really, really looking forward to it. You and I were talking before we went on the air, and you said you've been talking to people, and people have questions about some of the things that they remember from Saratoga past, and with a year off with the pandemic, will some of the things come back? And one of the things you mentioned that I think is certainly notable, breakfast at Saratoga, which a lot of people put on their calendar each and every year. It's a lot of fun to go in the mornings and watch the horses work out. So people can expect that again this year?
Absolutely, yeah. Breakfast on the Porch will return in 2000 after the pandemic-related absence last year. A couple more things, Seth, that I neglected to mention but are really important, and we prioritized in the last couple weeks. The Whitney Viewing Stand at the Oklahoma Training Track will reopen to the public 1 week from tomorrow on June 26th from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. So the Oklahoma Training Track will be open to the public on Saturdays and Sundays from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. And remember, that Whitney Viewing Stand was built for the express purpose of having a venue for people to enjoy the ritual of morning training on the Oklahoma. So that's great. You know, it's gratifying to be able to reopen especially in Saratoga, these areas that are so important to grow the sport, to be able to appreciate horses working in the morning, as you said. So yeah, Breakfast on the Porch will be back. The tram tours will be back. I can confirm that there will be no change to our long-standing policy allowing for outside food and beverage in the backyard. Believe it or not, that policy has always been specific to the backyard, though fans tend to stretch it to other locations. That is on the books. You know, when we're seeing enormous coolers occupying benches on the apron, you know, those should be for the fans. So, but we're there are no major changes in stake on the fan front, other than some new and exciting additions. You know, the spa verandas at the top of the stretch, these are five sort of pergola-type structures. Each one will hold 40 to 45, maybe even a few more people. They're group hospitality areas that are really appropriate for that kind of a size group. And prior to this year, if you were maybe 20, 25, celebrating a graduation, the day before or after a wedding, maybe a bachelor party, you had a hard time finding that kind of a space. So these spa verandas will be the perfect solution if you're looking to bring a medium-sized group to enjoy a day at the spa. And then we'll also be offering the tailgate at the turn. I think I got that right, which is basically on the first turn there, there'll be dedicated spots for cars to pull up and park. So think about, you know, a tailgate at Far Hills or other relevant racing environments. There'll be a dedicated bar, dedicated restrooms, hospitality area with betting machines and televisions galore. So those are two new upgrades for 2021, which we think fans will really like.
Yeah, and as I read about these, and I said to you before we went on the air, I think these are great ideas. Spa verandas, and for folks who didn't catch it, that's where the old top of the stretch picnic area used to be, and that is a great way to utilize that area. And the tailgate at the turn, I've driven by the track recently, and I've seen there was something going on there. That's a fabulous idea because, of course, our Capital OTB TV set is out by the 7 furlong chute. So on any given day, I'll either walk or take our golf cart around that first turn, and sometimes there'll be a race going off. And so I've watched plenty of races from there. A great venue, a great spot to catch a different perspective and enjoy the races, and to have people be able to pull up and tailgate, a brand new experience at Saratoga. That's a great idea. But also an improvement that was put in years past, and I've had the chance a couple of years ago to sit with some friends in the stretch section, which took some of those mostly unused grandstand sections up near the top of the stretch and reimagined that whole area into a really nice venue. And the stretch is going to expand this year as well.
That's a good way to say it, Seth. They have, but that area has been reimagined. It was a really innovative way to take a space that was not utilized to its full capacity and to develop something that was in line with what customers and fans were looking for in a modern stadium environment. And that's one of the things that obviously we take seriously with a venue like Saratoga. You know, we're the stewards of an incredibly historic property, but how do you also balance that and retaining the architectural integrity of the facility, but also being able to upgrade in certain areas to provide a different kind of level of amenity, a different environment. Some of those, they're almost lounge area type boxes. There are also the stadium seats in there. Again, a dedicated bar, restroom, so you don't have to go far to bet, to eat, to watch the races when they're happening. And those have been really well received.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about more about that just from a NYRA perspective, because I have been going to the track for decades, obviously, and there have been changes over the lifetime of my experience at the track. The clubhouse has expanded. The paddock area in the backyard has had tweaks. But I think over the past few years, the current NYRA administration has really made some significant changes. The 1863 Club is a great example that not only have maintained the history and the charm that people are invested in this area, but have upgraded the facility in a way that you alluded to a moment ago to the 21st century sports venue experience that fans, anticipate when they go out to a venue. And so, as I say, I think you guys have balanced it very nicely, and I'm sure that was key to the consideration, to maintain the history and the charm while moving into the 21st century.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the magic of sitting in one of those clubhouse boxes with the fans whirring overhead and watching the horses finish is like nothing else. It does feel like you're stepping back 150 years. But we also, the 1863 Club is a great example of that. You know, it's the future of Saratoga Racecourses is important. And a building like that is an investment in the future to be able to have a level of amenity for a large group on the first floor, that dedicated restaurant that's air conditioned, outdoor areas. We're not losing, you know, we're only adding. So maintaining the core history and tradition while also acknowledging what's important to people. A good example of that, you know, we removed, folks will see it for the first time this year. You were able to see it last year, Seth, as were some of the limited number of owners on track, removing that tent by the paddock that used to hold mid-size group events. That'll open up a huge vantage point for people to be able to watch horses in the paddock, not unlike what I talked about a little bit earlier with the Oklahoma training track. We want people to be able to get up close on that rail and view horses in the paddock, to see kids and families being able to see these athletes parading in the paddock is important. You know, that the picnic area you mentioned where the spa verandas will be, you know, this is an upgrade, and that's what we're focused on. I think credit to Dave O'Rourke, the NYRA president and CEO, that we view our role at Saratoga as stewards. You know, this property will be here long after we're all gone, with any luck. So we want to be able to invest in things that will guarantee the future of Saratoga, that will guarantee the future of a sport that's responsible for thousands of jobs in and around the capital region and 19,000 jobs across the state. We saw incredible interest in the job fair. We're, you know, pleased, especially after hearing some of the, you know, reading and understanding the labor shortage. But again, it's an example of people wanting to be in that environment. You know, Whitecaps who have been coming back for decades because it's something that they cherish. So the whole, it's all of those elements that make it such a special environment.
Yeah, that's great to hear with the job fair, because again, you have been reading about the labor market over the past few months, but Saratoga is such a special place, and a lot of the folks that work there have been there year after year. You go up to the mutual window and see folks you've seen year after year, some of the Whitecaps and whatnot. And yes, that extra green space by the paddock, the paddock tent served its purpose, but to have the extra green space there is great. And that paddock tent now, a bit of an anachronism with some of these new hospitality areas anyway. And I'm really looking forward to the spa verandas and the tailgate at the turn. 1863 Club was a great addition. The stretch area was also a great addition. So I'm looking forward to checking out these new venues. I will note, season and weekly passes are available now. You can check out the NYRA website for that. And the other venues we've talked about, most of the seating and reservations will become available next week. Pat, let's go back before we wind things up and talk a little bit about a couple of weeks ago, because Belmont Stakes Day was kind of the first day to maybe trial run a bigger crowd coming back to NYRA. It's the first pandemic kind of situation where there was a bigger number at a NYRA track on a big day. It was still a little bit limited a couple of weeks ago, but give us the NYRA perspective on Belmont Stakes Day. Certainly the handle numbers were fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was a success on every level. You know, we broke the all-time record for all sources handle on a non-Triple Crown day with about $113 million wagered, which was fantastic. You've seen really strong wagering across the sport, especially at the highest level. During the Triple Crown is a case in point. We've also seen really, really strong wagering really back to Saratoga of 2020. You know, that's continued through Aqueduct in the fall, through Aqueduct in the winter, and now here during this Belmont Spring Summer Meet. I mean, we're seeing significant increases in our average daily handle, in our overall handle. Belmont Stakes Day, I think, was feel lucky to have been able to experience a Belmont Day with 11,000 and change on hand. It was different. It was a very different experience. But considering last year in front of empty grandstands, with the level of uncertainty that existed in the world, even though we convinced ourselves otherwise at the time, it was great to feel the enthusiasm. The Belmont Stakes itself, I couldn't possibly get into all the performances on that day, but I mean, what a horse race that was. So pleased to see that Essential Quality is pointing to Jim Dandy Travers double, and it could be a really spectacular summer, especially for the 3-year-olds up in Saratoga. So it was a great day, and we'll look forward to building on that success in Saratoga. You're right. A number like 11,000 is a trial run, frankly, for what we'll probably see on opening day and throughout the meet. But it was fun. It was fun to be there. It felt like collectively a celebration of, you know, being able to finally turn the page on COVID, to get back to normal. And it was a great day.
Yeah, it was great to see fans back in New York. And I watched all three Triple Crown events here. I was working all 3 days, but even through the TV, you got the sense of the electricity coming back. So it was fun to see, and even more of that up at Saratoga. And you kind of alluded to it. I said last year it was a shame the fans couldn't be at Saratoga, given the really nice performances. Tis the Law and the Travers and Swiss Skydiver and many more. And given what we've seen in the first half of the year, I think Saratoga is again setting up for great performances on the equine side. Should mention, we talked about 11,000 on Belmont Stakes Day, but given what's come out the news in the past week, if any of our folks up here in this area want to head down, you'll be kind of moving back to normal at Belmont starting next week, correct, as far as fans are concerned?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Seth. Yeah, on Thursday, June 24th, we'll go back to being able to offer walk-up general admission, not unlike the backyard at Saratoga. For folks that may not have been able to experience beautiful Belmont Park, there's a backyard at Belmont with first-come, first-served picnic tables, areas to hang out with friends and family. It's a great spot. Area around the paddock is fantastic, and the apron. So, yep, the restrictions that have been lifted mean that next weekend we'll be able to offer general admission. Only reason for that, the gap in between the lifting of the restrictions and next week, is because Father's Day is a really big day at Belmont, and we had already sold a bunch of inventory for that. So we'll start it up on Thursday, and absolutely encourage folks upstate, if you get the opportunity, whether it's a weekday, a Saturday afternoon, or a Sunday morning, and feel like taking the drive down, it's a fun day.
Yeah, we made the trip many times and thoroughly enjoy it. Great facility, great spot to watch the races, and great racing as well. But looking forward to, again, a few weeks. I'm highly anticipating seeing how many people show up on opening day, but I think it's going to be a great meet. I'm really looking forward to it, particularly, again, given that 100% capacity news that came out this week. Pat, we really appreciate your taking the time to join us this morning, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth.
Appreciate it. Pat McKenna, Director of Communications for the New York Racing Association.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill in the studio on this Saturday morning. I didn't get a chance to welcome you to Racing Across America because we went right from handicapper support into... actually, I did get a chance because I introduced Pat McKenna. They're all melding together here. The control room's going, you're going crazy. But so slightly. Pat McKenna, again, kind of updating us on Saratoga and the 100% capacity. That was great news that came out this week. And then subsequently that press release with the new hospitality areas. I think that tailgate at the turn is going to be a lot of fun, where you can kind of drive up on the first turn. If you've never walked over that way, as I said to Pat, our TV set is at the 7 furlong chute on the backstretch. So we walk down that road or take the golf cart a couple times a day. If a race is going, we'll pull over to the rail. So it's kind of a fun spot on the track to watch a race. I think that's going to be kind of a hit. And the top of the stretch, the new verandas at the top of the stretch, I think are going to be popular as well. I can't say I've been to that area enough to know how populated that normally was on a day-to-day basis, frankly. That was not an area, you know, I've been up there, but not regularly. So I don't know if that's displacing people or not. Obviously, if you sat on a picnic table up there, you can go to the backyard. There's still plenty of options as far as picnicking, but that it's I'm trying to envision what exactly they've done up there. So I won't get a look until probably the track opens up, because I haven't seen any pictures or even artist rendering of that. But and then the stretch, they're expanding that. If you haven't checked out that area, at the very least, if you're not going to use it this season, go look at that, where they took some of the grandstand sections way at the end of the grandstand that many days would be unused. And they kind of upgraded that, and it's a nice facility now. Last 2 years ago, when everybody was in the facility, I sat with some folks a couple of days in that the stretch area up there, and it's nice. And that's an option folks can consider as well. So, again, looking forward to it, just walking around, talking to people the past 3 months, but certainly the past 3 or 4 days since the news came out, everybody's ready. We are a couple of minutes from the upcoming third at Royal Ascot. And then we're going to have Bob Ehalt right after that. And Bob, again, was down at Monmouth last weekend for the Pegasus, which will play into the Haskell for Mandaloon. And we'll talk a little bit about that and more with Bob. In the meantime, I wanted to pull up yesterday. I said during the handicapper's report I would show you the DQ win for Campanelli yesterday that got Wesley Ward his win. First, we'll watch the stretch run, and then we'll watch the head-on. And you can see Campanelli winds up running second under the wire, but got moved up on the subsequent DQ. He runs second to Dragon Symbol. And you can see Campanelli is in the yellow silks here. And, again, winds up just getting nudged at the wire. And subsequently, again, when we show the head-on, look for those yellow silks. And you will see the Dragon Symbol. To me, you know, Brian Addo was on earlier, and he said it was 52 to 48 for him. I'm making it more like 75-25, because you can see the yellow silks there. And look where he is in the pack and where he winds up. He gets floated out. And so, you know, Brian said Frankie Dettori didn't stop riding. But still, when you're getting moved out, your momentum is going out as opposed to going completely forward. So I think, you know, you can see the horse really gets moved out there quite a bit from where he was on the inside of that pack. So I thought the DQ was justified there. And again, you make up your own mind. I was surprised because typically, you know, across the pond, they are not as predisposed to those kind of moves as maybe we are over here. But yesterday, Campanelli did get moved up after the DQ at Royal Ascot in the Grade 1 Commonwealth Cup. So, again, nice win, DQ or not, for a Wesley Ward to go over and pick up a Group 1 with one of his runners, who also won last year at Royal Ascot. Campanelli won the Queen Mary last year, so 2 for 2. A Royal Ascot for Campanelli. A nice win yesterday. Again, on a DQ, so it's got an asterisk by it. But again, in my opinion, kind of a deserved decision. All right, they're loading in for this upcoming race at Royal Ascot. Closing day for the 2021 meet. It's the Hardwick Group 2 event here. The favorite is the number 2, Broom, who goes out for Aiden O'Brien, Ryan Moron. I thought the 4 and the 6 may be a little bit interesting. Highest Ground at 11-1, the 4. And Illarab, the number 6, at 7-2. The favorite, again, though, is the number 2, Broom. So we'll send it to Royal Ascot. And the Hardwick will come back after that and be joined by Bob Ehalt from Bloodhorse. All of that after this. Stay tuned.
Let's head over to the man who's describing our first four races of the day here at Royal Ascot on the final day. David, over to you.
And they're off in the Hardwick Stakes. Alba Flora and Wonderful Tonight and Sir Ron Priestley, the quickest three into stride over a mile and a half, with Thunderous wearing the blinkers for the first time. And on the outside of the field, drawn wide, is up there with Wonderful Tonight and William Buick. Sir Ron Priestley, yellow and red, the near side, Franny Norton. Hookham is there under Jim Crowley, with Broom just in behind. The Graham White checks the favourite, White Face. The grey Alba Flora now in midfield with Japan, past King Edward the Seventh Stakes Stakes winner on the outside of Illarab in search of that incredible seven-timer. Deja and Highest Ground are the back two. Highest Ground attempting to give Sir Michael Stout an unbelievable 12th win in the Hardwick Stakes. They're getting on for having completed their first half mile, and it is Sir Ron Priestley, the 2019 St. Ledger second, that leads the way to Thunderous and Richard Kingsgate in second. Who come in third? Wonderful Tonight, the dual Group 1 winner back in October, in fourth position. Fillion Mare champion winner here, ahead of a couple of lengths then to Alba Flora. And Alba Flora is still running on the inside of Broome, followed by Illarab and Tom Marquand, Japan and Wayne Lawton, and Highest Ground and Deja, the back two, as the field are about to head inside their final six furlongs here. 10 lengths front to back, with Sir Ron Priestley setting out to make this a proper test to Thunderous in second place. Hookham is continuing in third. And then Wonderful Tonight, the blue and yellow, followed by Broome and Ryan Moore, with Alba Flora, James Doyle on the inside of Broome, racing two by two with Illarab and Japan, the next pair, Highest Grounds and Oisin Murphy, and Deja and David Egan at the back as they run inside their last four furlongs in the Hardwick. Sir Ron Priestley still leading his stablemate Thunderous. The Mark Johnston pair, one and two. Thunderous now just getting shaken up in second. Hookham poised in third. Wonderful Tonight likewise in fourth. Broome is next on the outside of Alba Flora inside the three. Illarab is now being pushed along. Japan is moving better than a few around outside in eighth place, then Highest Ground and Deja. They run towards the final two furlongs, and Wonderful Tonight has taken off on the outside. The filly takes over under William Buick from Hookham, has breezed past him. Broome is then running on in third. Sir Ron Priestley's beaten. Japan is plugging on. Wonderful Tonight leads inside the last furlong. Broome is staying on with Hookham to try and close the filly down, but it's Wonderful Tonight in front. Broome is gaining on the outside, but Wonderful Tonight, a superb winner of the Hardwick Stakes. Wonderful Tonight steals the show to Broome. Hookham clear of Thunderous and Alba Flora. And then the longtime leader, Sir Ron Priestley.
Wonderful.
Wonderful Tonight lives up to the name, gets it done. 15-2-5 unofficial in that third at Royal Ascot. As Wonderful Tonight went off as, the second choice at 4-1. Third choice at 4-1. Broome, the favorite, winds up running second. 15-2-5 again. Hold your tickets until that one is declared official. Joined now by our friend Bob Ehalt. You can find him in the Blood Horse, America's Best Racing, and more. And Bob was down at Monmouth last weekend, so I thought we'd get a little update on Mandaloon in the Pegasus and more. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Always a pleasure to join you.
Yeah, happy to have you on board, and looking forward to seeing you in person in a few weeks. I'm guessing you're already planning your Saratoga visit or visits, and I just had Pat McKenna on from the New York Racing Association, and I can tell you the folks up here are raring to go with the news coming out this week of 100% capacity up at Saratoga.
I'm looking forward to it myself. I think opening day, I'm going to be curious to see what the attendance
me
is.
Me too.
I don't know, maybe you get a little carried away thinking it'll be a sellout, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to be there opening day, even if you just kind of maybe take your lunch hour and go over and you're there to scream out, you know, that first race, which starts a mile and an eighth first race, right on the finish line, screaming, they're off at Saratoga. I think there's going to be a lot of people who want to be there for that after what we've gone through with this pandemic. So, a lot of excitement to get ready for the bean.
Yeah, I am totally on board with what you're saying. I think there is going to be a knockout crowd on open. I'm really excited to see, because I think people are just, they can't wait after last year off and So it's going to be fun to see in a few weeks. All right, let's go back to last weekend. As I say, it was last Sunday, so haven't had a chance here on the network to recap this. But we're going to look at the Pegasus, and we'll kind of pick it up over on the far turn. Mandaloon's going to be the number two horse. Got off to a poor start, but at 30 cents to the dollar on the far turn, it looked like he was going to kind of just use his class and blow by the field. And for a few strides, you thought that was going to be the case. But, man, Jimmy Jerkins, Weyburn, and maybe Weyburn is a better horse than we anticipated. I'm not sure how it's going to play out going forward. But as they come to the wire, we're watching him come down the stretch now. Weyburn gives him all he can ask for. Your impressions of Mandaloon and the Pegasus, and I know you were down there last week, so what did Brad Cox have to say after the race?
Well, I think everybody, I think they were pleased to get him back. I think it was a very useful race to get him a race over the racetrack, get used to. He did have to overcome some trouble. I mean, I was kind of watching the race with Brad on one of the television monitors. And, you know, there was a bit of a look when, you know, you see him get squeezed. I mean, in a five, you know, you get through the Derby with a relatively clean trip, and then you get a five-horse field, and all of a sudden you squeeze back to last. But, you know, I think he showed his class. He was making a real, it looked like he was going to make a real strong move at the top of the stretch, and he got to the front, and you thought it was over. And then this is kind of like, I think, the great mystery with the new riding crop, whip, whatever you want to call it, rule. You kind of would have thought at the top of the stretch Mandaloon was going to win by two or three. Why he didn't? Well, you know, look, Weyburn, I think, is a pretty competitive horse. I mean, he showed a lot of guts in the Gotham to win that race. But, you know, you talking to Laurent Giroux after the race, you know, he did feel the horse started loafing, looking around when he got to the front a little bit. Or, you know, shall we say losing focus more so. And, you know, he was struggling to try to find a way to get him back into the race. And he did still manage to win. But I think that's the great X factor with this rule where you don't know. I mean, you could argue for hours that you just can't prove anything because you don't know if each horse had the crop and could be urged. Would the results have been different? Maybe it would. Maybe it wouldn't. That it's all subjective, and I think that's one of the issues with the rule. And a lot of it's going to be. I think it's determined to each better. How do you feel about it? You know, I mean, do you feel are you betting on horses that you're getting the most out of? I'm not sure. That's something I think individual people have to answer.
Yeah, and it may be one of those situations because you did think, oh, he's going to use his class and go right on by. He didn't, so maybe it was a situation. But you're right. You have to look in your own handicapping crystal ball and make decisions as they go forward. And it may just turn out to be, as I said earlier, gave indications earlier in the career. Maybe Weyburn is going to turn out to be nice. This was only his sixth career start, so he may be one that we have to watch going forward in these summer three-year-old races as well for Jimmy Jerkins.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy has said, I talked to him after the race, Jimmy seemed, although he got a free spot in the Haskell, that he seemed more interested in going to the Jim Dandy with him. He's going to be bringing the horse up to Saratoga, so I think he's going to stay there and use that maybe as a prep to see if he can get him into the Travers. So, you know we're going to find out more, and as I say, the situation with Monmouth, it's very hard. Personally, I'm more in favor of a rule like Kentucky, where they have put limits on the amount of times that you could encourage the horse. I think that's just better because I don't know. I think when you look at the issue with the rule, I'm kind of in the middle of it from what talking to the trainers, talking to the jockeys. I think both sides are being a little bit overstated. The safety issue, certainly I'm not going to dismiss it. If someone feels it's unsafe, they're the riders, that's their call. But the riders I've talked to who are riding down there, Jose Ferrer, the leading rider in particular, said it's not dangerous. And then the issue with the actual crop itself, I don't know, Seth, if you've ever held one or had it. I've had one. I've struck myself with it repeatedly. It does not hurt. You feel it. It doesn't hurt, and that's where I think kind of this situation is about optics. And I think in the end, the sport has to decide, is the optics to people who maybe aren't your fans worth the optics that if this turns off betters? Because say if Bandaloud had gotten beaten, I'm not sure about, you know, how do you feel then confident? Do you feel confident betting a lot of money on these horses who just may not be able to get up in time for you? So you got to decide whose optics are you going to be concerned with. So that's why I'm more in favor of a compromise where you limit the amount of times, and you should try to point out to the public it really doesn't hurt. I think you would say, from being at Saratoga, we're not seeing horses come back with welts and things like that anymore because of these new whips. They are very totally humane.
Yeah, you know, you make a great point. Maybe we should make more of an effort to get that out there. We did it, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe it's time for another addition to that. Up at Saratoga, we had, and I'm trying to think who we had. I can't remember the jockey, but came in with, at that time, they had kind of redone the riding crop and were calling it a popper. And the end of the stick, when you swung it, it made a little popping noise. And again, it had more of a cushion on it than traditional, but the noise was just as effective as anything. And so I think maybe you make a great point. Maybe we should make more of an effort of showing that, you know, reimagined riding crop as it is now and has been for, you know, at least half a decade.
Yeah, I really do think so. I mean, Jose Ferrer told me, and I wrote it in the story, a story I did afterwards. He says his kids take the whips and they play with it, and they kind of fight with it, like maybe how when we were little kids, we'd get these plastic swords and you'd have fights. As I say, I've had it. I tell people, I think the only way you could hurt yourself with the whip or hurt someone is if you poke them in the eye with it. To me, they're just, as I say, I'm not going to say you don't feel it, but there's a big difference between pain and feel. It's like almost being hit with a Nerf football. So, I think that's the issue, where sometimes the sport becomes too black and white, and somewhere there's somewhere in the middle, because I think if you just do try to really be honest about things and try to educate properly to the fans, you know, look, these days there's going to be people who don't like whatever you do, there's going to be a segment of people who don't like it. So you can't be, there's never going to be a solution that everybody will be happy with. I do think, I think the interesting part will be the handle at Monmouth when all is said and done. How are the fans? Do you feel comfortable, you know, risking a lot of money on a horse who just might hang on you in the final 16th? That's an individual decision. It'll be interesting to see how that all comes out.
Yeah, I agree, because I like the product there, and I think there's typically a lot of familiar names coming over from New York to try the racing there. So it will be interesting to see what the handle numbers are. To me, they went a little too far in one direction, and I'm with you. There's got to be some compromise area in the middle. I don't know whether that's going to happen in New Jersey, but I'd love to see it happen. But again, it will suss things out at the end of the meet. And speaking of the meet, let's talk a little bit about it, because in Blood Horse, you kind of talked to some of the folks down at Monmouth as we are early in their meet. And you mentioned it, and it's a great point. It is worth mentioning. Early in this meet so far, they just got hammered with bad weather early, which was hurting the turf racing and whatnot. But starting about last weekend and with the Pegasus and focus on Mandaloon, it seems like maybe Monmouth had turned a little bit. So, A, talk a little bit about, I've been asking everybody over the past few weeks, folks who have been at the Triple Crown events and beyond, I've been asking, what was it like a end of pandemic experience on track at Monmouth the other day? And then B, talk about your conversations with the folks in Monmouth and how they see the meet playing out now that, as I say, it seems to have kind of turned a corner this year.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, I got to say this. Monmouth was one of the first tracks last year that I went to. Going to last year's Haskell, they had several thousand people on the grounds. So Monmouth has kind of been at the forefront a little bit of having the fans there. It really felt like a normal day at the races there, I got to say, on last Sunday. Some people were wearing masks. Others weren't. I guess it's your own comfort level on what you feel. But I think it kind of shows, people we're ready, where people are feeling a little confident about, you know, their ability to mingle with other people. It was a good thing to see, just like it really was on Belmont Stakes Day, when there was a lot of people back at Belmont Park. Certainly Belmont doesn't get the numbers that Saratoga does on a daily basis, so going to Belmont, you know, you don't really feel it as much. But I think it's going to be. I think what I saw certainly at Monmouth about the way people were there and enjoying the day, I think bodes very well that you're going to see the big crowds back at Saratoga.
And again, the folks at Monmouth seem to feel like they've turned a corner for this season. And again, it does seem like, and we know from Saratoga, weather can affect the summertime racing, a lot of turf racing. In the first few weeks at Monmouth, we're getting some inclement weather. So it seems like, and folks were kind of looking, again, given the rules down there and the situation with the jockeys and whatnot, folks have been looking and trying to decide which way Monmouth's going to go. And it was a little unfair given the early weather. But I think now we're getting a better look. And it sounds like from your article, the folks in charge down there were pretty happy with the last week or so.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the numbers for last Sunday and the weekend were very encouraging for them. And if that continues, I mean, I do think there's a feeling out process. I mean, people, I think, were additionally hesitant about what to do with the product because of all of the controversy over the rules. And the weather doesn't help you when you have turf races and it comes off the turf. That doesn't help you. So the weather's been better. Things are going, you know, the racing was good. I mean, I think, too, when you get a star, it helps you. Bandaloon, hey, you know, I don't know, maybe it might take a few years, but at some point he might be the Kentucky Derby winner at some point. And when you get a horse like that, it gives the card attention. And it gives people, a race to kind of build around and see what they could do. So, I think they're very encouraged by what they see. And this talk, you know, they're hoping before the Haskell comes in, to put in this, to start having this fixed odds wagering at Monmouth, which is going to be something very, very new and different. And you know, hopefully for them will be quite popular. So there's a lot, you know, there's some reasons for optimism about kind of maybe turning around a bit of a slow start.
Now, fixed odds wagering is something everybody will be looking at and waiting for results. I'll be very intrigued. And I love your optimism. We'll know whether there's a Kentucky Derby winner in a couple of years, and you might have nailed it there. Let's move on, because you also wrote about, you talked to the connections of Raging Bull. He's in tomorrow in the poker, and I want to talk about that in just a second. But also, you had a nice article talking to the connections of Rombauer, the winner of the Preakness. And I thought the discussion with them about their summertime plans was kind of interesting, because West Coast, East Coast, turf, dirt, everything seems possible for Rombauer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will say this. His owner, John Fradkin, who owns the horse with his wife, Diane, he's very, very interested in those, in the New York turf triple races for three-year-olds. For the Colts, they're each worth $1 billion. And you know, he does believe his horse can run well on turf. And you know, I'm not sure if the trader you know, William McCarthy is on the same wavelength, but, you know, I think his thought was his horse could turf, and for $1 million to run in a three-year-old turf race in a year where Chad Brown really does not have a very, you know, standout turf three-year-old, he has a better shot of running for $1 million on the turf against those horses in New York, like Sainthood, and DeJour, which was Bob Baffert and now is Bill Mott, running against them for $1 million than he does against Mandaloon. Maybe Medina Spirit comes back. Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon on a speed-favoring track that may not suit his horse. So, it's an interesting thing to hear that the Preakness winner might go to turf, but I think it's a real possibility. And certainly I give credit to Mr. Brackett because he's willing to look at it and make a decision, which in some cases, you know, is a difficult one to make. He does feel that after this, if he runs to the Belmont Derby, he will go back to the dirt with his horse. But, you know, I think especially for a person who has a small stable like he does, the chance for $1 billion is huge for them, and they can't happen a lot. So I think he's very keen to try to find that spot for his horse. And, you know, in a sense, maybe the Belmont Derby might be that for him.
Yeah, and I love that subdivision. If people who watch the show know, three-year-olds on turf, and I don't think there's any super standout this year. So if you think you have a dirt three-year-old who can turf, $1 million certainly is very attractive. Speaking of turf, yeah, let's talk a little bit about it, because you had an article talking to the Connections of Raging Bull coming off a steady string of Grade 1 events, including we're going to watch Last Time Out for Raging Bull in the seasonal debut. We're going to see the stretch run here of the Maker's Mark Mile back at Keeneland on April 9th. Raging Bull, the number 8 horse, gets up by a couple of lengths for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt, but will show up tomorrow, Sunday, in the poker at Belmont Park. Talk a little bit about the Connections, how they wound up in the poker, and how you see the race playing out tomorrow.
Well, I mean, like what I said about Rob Bauer, where you're going to run for $1 million and you're not going to have to face Chad Brown, most likely. For $250,000, you're going to have to face three horses from Chad Brown in the poker. And Raging Bull is, I think, one of these horses that really doesn't get the credit that he's due. You know, I mean, this is a horse, as you say, he's now a Grade 1 winner at, I believe it's 3, 5, and 6. Very game, very consistent. I think he would have gone out west to run, I believe it was at the Shoemaker, where he would have probably have been targeted, but because of some transportation issues these days with the Texas flight not available, he stayed. You know, they had to scrap those plans, and that brought them to the poker, where, you know, as I say, he had a streak. I believe it was 12 straight Grade 1 starts. This is a different Grade 3, but you know, the mile suits him. He's a very good miler. He's going to use this as a prep, I believe, for the 4-star Dave. And ultimately, then down the road, there's the Breeders' Cup Mile at Del Mar, where I think he'll be very strong on some firm turf. So, you know, he's really, this is a horse who should be, you know, who is a definite Grade 1 horse. He's in good form. It is a stepping stone to get him to the Grade 1 back to 4-star Dave. But I think he's going to put in a good effort. You know, as I say, Chad's got a couple other horses who could be competitive in there. I would think, though, the big one to worry about would be Get Smokin', who has some speed. I don't think there's a lot of speed in the race, and he might be a little tough to catch on the front end. When you leave him alone, he's a tough horse. He was clobbered kind of by Raging Bull of the Maker's Mark, but the pace was pretty fast there. I don't think he'll get as much of a pressure pace Sunday as he did in that race. So should be interesting, but, you know, again, Raging Bull is really one of those durable, consistent, top-level horses, which Chad does seem to really bring out. I mean, as I say, he's got Raging Bull, who's probably as good at the mile as anybody, and he also has, you know, Domestic Spending, who might be the best older turf distance horse. So, as I say, so Sunday you'll get to see one of them.
Yeah, looking forward to it. That's tomorrow at Belmont, the poker with Raging Bull, as you know, gearing up for a Grade 1 up at Saratoga, and looking forward to Saratoga. As I said when we started the interview, and Bob, appreciate the conversation this morning, and I would guess next time we'll talk, we'll be face-to-face up at Saratoga. Looking forward to it.
Very much so, Seth. Look forward to seeing you up there.
Bobby Hault, Blood Horse. You can also catch his work on America's Best Racing and more. We'll wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. First, we want to remind you, don't forget, today at the Clubhouse Racebook, the Pick and Putt promotion in honor of the U.S. Open this weekend. Come down today or tomorrow. Put your name in the hat. You can get randomly selected to step up to the putting green and sink a putt for some dough, some free OTB cash. Available here at the Clubhouse Racebook Pick and Putt promotion, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. There's also a $100 online Winabet contest today. Check out the website for more information. And tomorrow, there is a match bet promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook as well. Once again, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. I'm going to wrap it up. For Racing Across America on this Saturday morning, thanks for joining us as always. I will be back about an hour and a half or so to kick off OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll take a look at a little Belmont, a little Churchill Downs, and more on this Saturday, hopefully handing out some good information, hopefully, because yesterday, I have to admit, Friday, I was treading water a little bit after a couple of good weeks overall. So it was a little bit of a little downslide, but we'll try to rebound this afternoon as we discuss the racing on this mid-June Saturday afternoon. Looking forward to it. Hopefully you'll be tuned in then. But as I say, wrapping up Racing Across America for Saturday morning. Thanks for tuning in. And again, we'll see you a little bit later this afternoon.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.